retired New England Patriots who went on to suffer tragic lives dealing with brain injuries. We have a special report on the emerging risk of playing football. You're definitely going to want to hear this. Then, he was the radio voice of the Boston Bruins for 16 seasons. Now he calls games for the red-hot expansion Vegas Golden Knights. Dave Gosher joins us to tell us about his time in Boston and his new job. It's Wednesday, November 1st, 2017. I'm Chris Gasper, and this is Season Ticket. Welcome to Season Ticket, a daily podcast from the Boston Globe Sports Department and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. They are the football players you once cheered for but may have forgotten about. Former New England Patriots suffering from or dying with brain damage. Deterioration of cognitive function is now being seen as one of the potential effects of playing professional football. Boston Globe Sports investigative and enterprise reporter Bob Holler talked with the former players and their families about this issue, and he wrote about this controversial topic in a piece called Big Men with Broken Minds, The Largely Forgotten Faces of the Patriots Franchise. Bob is here in studio joining us today on Season Ticket. Bob, thanks for coming on.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me in. Thank you.
So let's start with this. I think a lot of people who are football fans have probably heard about players after their playing careers dealing with some issues when it comes to cognitive function, and sometimes it's depression. And you hear these three letters, CTE. What is CTE, Bob?
Well, it's chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which is some serious damage to the brain. I'm not a scientist. I'm a sports writer. But it's been discovered and it's been proven that there are changes in the proteins in the brain that can be identified by researchers. BU's done a lot of work on this, and they've found the correlation between the repetitive head injuries that occur in sports like football. This actually goes way back to boxing. CTE grew out of the initial definition of this, or diagnosis of this, was called dementia pugilistica. We've seen it in so many boxers through the years. Muhammad Ali is probably the best example of this. You know, you keep getting hits to the head, you know, there's going to be damage. And what they've found now is that it's not just concussions that are causing this. It's the repetitive subconcussive hits, these small just hits that you just continue to get on and on from the time you begin playing as a child, football or any other sport, all through your career until, you know, these guys who have played 10, 15 years in the NFL. We've seen some of the worst cases now.
I know that there have been six former Patriots who have been diagnosed with CTE. You can only diagnose CTE after death. That's the only reliable scientific test at this point. You spoke with the families of players who are deceased who tested positive for this. One is John Bull Bramlett, a former linebacker for the Patriots. He died in October 2014 of Alzheimer's. His family did not allow his brain to be tested for CTE, but it sounded like they were convinced he had CTE and dealt with these issues.
Right. This is very common. I mean, a lot of families, rightfully so in their own minds, they want to hold on to their deceased, to their loved ones, and they don't want to, they're uncomfortable with subjecting them to the autopsy and giving their brain and their spinal fluid and their spine to a researcher. So she was one of them, Nancy Bramlett, his wife, Bull's wife, held on to it. But she's convinced that he had CTE. I mean, all the symptoms were there, and I'm fairly certain that they would have found it myself. You know, they've tested, 100 at BU alone. They've tested maybe 111 NFL players whose brains have been submitted, and I think they've found it in, 90-something percent. So,
it's 110 out of 111.
Right, right. So, I mean, now, obviously, these are cases where people suspected CTE. It's not a really good study in terms of how it affected the whole league. But there have been other studies that really support the fact that brain damage and football are linked. I mean, the CDC several years ago did a study on NFL players and the rate of mortality from Alzheimer's disease, and found that it was four times higher among NFL players than the general population. You know, all these things put together are a warning sign.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you talk about the three players who are now deceased who played for the Patriots, in the story, you're speaking with their families, and it's clear that their quality of life declined quite a bit. Their ability to remember things like where they lived, their ability to continue to work, and in the case of Len Kitus, who was a dentist, all of a sudden didn't want to see patients. These are guys who were once these vibrant athletes, and towards the end of their lives, these were people who were dealing with a situation where they were really infirm.
Right. And, you know, we've seen the really high-profile cases, the Junior Seau case, you know, tragedy involving him, the Aaron Hernandez case. But we don't know about all these other guys, these forgotten guys, and what these families are going through across the country. They're living, and a lot of these guys didn't make a lot of money. A lot of them are scraping by, and they're struggling to get the health care they need, and the families aren't getting the emotional support they may need. And so these guys are just drifting away as they get older and older, and the families are going with them, and it's a real tragedy. I mean, I grew up watching these guys. I'm an old-timer. I watched, you know, Bill Lankitis and Wergowski and Bramble. I watched them play, you know, back in the days when the Patriots were bouncing from, you know, Harvard Stadium to Fenway Park to Boston College. And it's not hard to imagine that 30 years from now, we're going to be hearing these stories about Wes Welker and Julian Edelman and Gronk. And, you know, it's just these hits, whether they're concussions or subconcussive hits, they're taking a toll.
I think this is scary for a lot of players. And you spoke to some players who are preparing to undergo like baseline neurological testing. And it sounded like they're really terrified about what could happen to them.
Well, they really are. I mean, because they see the guys that played on the right, on the left of them, on the line or in the backfield, they see what's happening to them. And so now with this, you know, the NFL has stepped up. They had to go through years of litigation before they did step up, but they finally said, hey, we're going to make this settlement with you players. We're going to dedicate almost $1 billion to trying to fix this. And as part of that, we're going to give you this baseline testing for free. Go in and see where you're at. And so these guys, when they see that a guy like Nick Bonaconte, this great Patriots linebacker, he says, you know, I feel like a child. I can't function anymore. I just, when they see a guy like that who played next to them, John Morris of the Patriots, you know, who played for, 15 years, I think, with the Patriots, you know, all-decade player, a Hall of Famer for the Patriots. You know, he's worried about what his baseline test is going to be. He's in good shape now, but they fear that this can come on quickly and they can die a very desperate and undignified death in some ways.
Now, you mentioned the NFL there, Bob, and they obviously have sort of gotten enlightened on this issue. They've made a number of strides to try and address the concussion issue. They've changed rules. They now have the concussion protocol. There's something called the ATC spotter. It's an athletic trainer who sits in the booth, and if he spots someone who looks like they're concussed or showing signs of being concussed, they can stop the game to take them off the field. But as you pointed out, it's not just the concussions that get reported. It's just the nature of football. Tons of collisions all the time. It's the cumulative effect of playing football and banging heads with people.
Exactly. And it's not just on Sunday. It's practice, 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 you know, when you have contact practices. And even these guys who are dying with this disease, possible CTE, you know, they look back and say, well, I might have done the same thing again. I love the game so much.
Patriots wide receiver Danny Amendola earlier this season was asked about the risk of playing football in CTE, and it was right after that study from the Boston University CTE Center, which is really at the epicenter of the research in this issue. Amendola said this: obviously it's in the back of my mind, but I'm committed and I'm prepared. I know what I signed up for. These guys now know what they sign up for. The guys you talked to and the families of the deceased players you talked to, they didn't know what they were signing up for. No one told them.
Right. And they also weren't getting paid millions of dollars, and which in some it may make a difference. These guys
changes the risk calculus.
Absolutely. And these guys think, well, yeah, if I'm going to make I'll make my $10 million this year, $10 million, and I'll get out and I'll make some money. Some guys have done that. Some guys have gotten out early. But the vast majority of them stay too long. I mean, got a poor guy like Wes Welker, what's his life going to look like after all the hits he's taken?
Do you see, Bob, a threat to football long-term, sort of an existential threat to the game, the idea that people aren't going to let their kids play or they're not going to want to play, they're going to choose other sports because this could happen to them?
I think so. I think it'll be long-term. I don't think it'll be maybe even in our lifetimes, but I do think so. I mean, John Morris, who, you know, another Patriots Hall of Famer, said, I think this is the death of the game. I mean, I think that when you see players falling like this and there's no proof that this isn't going to continue to happen, I mean, I think it really is going to discourage a lot of parents from having their kids play, and that sort of trickle-up effect or trickle-down effect will continue for decades until possibly it's just, you know, by attrition, the game sort of evaporates at some point.
And people tend to think as well that it's only an issue when it comes to players who play professionally, right? But the BU CTE Center had a study that came out. They studied 214 former football players at all levels, and they concluded that those who had participated in organized tackle football before the age of 12 were twice as likely to experience problems with behavioral regulation, apathy, problem solving, and task execution. They were three times as likely, according to the study, to be diagnosed with depression.
Well, I think that's the dagger right there. I mean, when parents see that, I mean, who would let a kid play, you know, knowing that possibility could happen? Tom Brady didn't play, right?
He tackle didn't. Yeah, football. I spoke with his dad, and he said they didn't have Tom Brady, greatest quarterback of all time, never played Pop Warner football.
Right. Another great Patriots player, Russ Francis, I talked to, a Hall of Famer player, he didn't play either till he was 15, and he really recommends it. A lot of these guys, at that point, your brain's more fully developed, and at least if you're going to play the game, you love it that much, you need to play. Wait until you're past that time where your brain can really get affected at a young age.
How many of these guys you talk to and their families are able to get money from this lawsuit? The NFL settled with former players over the concussion issue.
I think that's still shaking out. I talked to a number of people who are really not certain about what they're going to get, who's going to get what. They're worried that some players who did not have very serious damage may be trying to get more money than perhaps they should, and others might not get enough. I think there's a long way to go, and there's a lot of lawyers who are trying to shark their way into this and get a piece of it, and there's a long way to go, I think, to really make sure this is handled equitably.
Bob, I just want to know, where did this story start? What was the genesis of this story, and how did you track down some of these guys?
So I came for a meeting, my usual meeting with our crack sports editors here, Joe Sullivan, Scott Thurston, Greg Lang. And as we were leaving, Scott Thurston said, what about the Patriots? What have we done? And I said, well, of course we know about Ted Johnson. We've written about him. We know about Junior Seau, Aaron Hernandez. Let's take a deeper look and see what we can find. So I went to the litigation, the class action suit against the NFL, and I looked through there's thousands of plaintiffs in that case from all the teams, and I looked for the Patriots players and found hundreds of those and sorted through those and see what I could come up with. And we focused on one period of the early 70s with these guys. We can go to the 80s next. I mean, there's players in the 90s who were affected. So it's a real it's a chronic deep problem.
Yeah, it's really heartbreaking to see. Bob, thanks for your time here and for informing us on this issue, and I'm sure you'll be keeping an eye on it. That is Bob Holler, the investigative reporter for the Boston Globe Sports Department. You can find him on Twitter. His handle is @Bob_Holler. That's @Bob_Holler. Bob, thanks for coming on.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
Okay, we're going to bring on a familiar voice when we come back, Dave Gosher. He was the longtime announcer for the Bruins. He's now back in town with a new team and a new gig. We'll talk to him next. Welcome back. A quick note, if you like Season Ticket, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribing is the best way to make sure you get the latest episode as soon as it's available. Moving along now, if you listen to the Bruins on the radio anytime between 2000 and 2016, you heard Dave Gosher calling the games. When the Bees won the Stanley Cup in 2011, Dave was there.
With 5 seconds to go, the exit behind the Canucks net, get the duck boats ready! Get the duck boats ready! After 39 long years, the Cup is back home! The Bruins are 2011 Stanley Cup champions!
Dave is now calling games for the expansion Vegas Golden Knights. They lost to the New York Rangers Tuesday night at Madison Square Garden, but still off to a very good 8-3-0 start this season. The Golden Knights will be in town on Thursday to face the Bruins at TD Garden, and we're happy to have Dave Gosher join us now via telephone. Dave, welcome back to Boston.
Hey, thanks, Chris. I appreciate it very much.
Well, it's great to have you. We'll start off with this. You were the voice of the Bruins for 16 seasons. You were basically synonymous with the team. I think a lot of people miss you very much, and they want to know, why did you leave the Bruins to go cover an expansion team in Las Vegas?
I think there were a few things that played into it, Chris. I mean, I really enjoyed doing the Bruins on radio, and certainly it was, if you had asked me when I was fortunate enough to get that job when I was 30, if I would ever really be looking too hard for another job, I would have told you probably not. But I think, I continued to kind of have goals somewhere in the back of my mind, and I had an opportunity a couple of years ago to do some college hockey games for NBCSN. And that adrenaline rush of live television was something that stayed with me. Now, that being said, no one had ever offered me a full-time TV play-by-play job until a couple of months ago. But, I think the opportunity at this point in my career to, I had done radio for 24 years between the Bruins and 7 years in minor league hockey as well, that if I was going to make a change, it was going to be at this point of my career and of my life. And I think the opportunity to be the first ever TV voice of the first ever major pro sports franchise in Vegas was something that the more I thought about it and the more, you know, I kind of talked to the people involved, it was really too intriguing and too enticing to pass up.
What's it like living in Las Vegas, and how has the team been received there?
It's been a lot of fun. I got to be honest with you. You know, I think most of us, you know, and I did it, and I think we all do it. If you go to Vegas, you go to, you know, you to the Strip, and you run up and down there for 3 or 4 days, and then you go home. You almost have to go home sometimes. living in Vegas, that's a much different experience. And I never realized how scenic it is. You know, once you get away from the Strip a little bit and get out west, where you know, most of us live in an area called Summerlin, and you get out towards Red Rock Canyon. It's just a beautiful, scenic, mountainous area. And I would say the team has been, they sell out every game. You know, they've had standing room only crowds so far. Obviously, the tragic shootings there a month ago today, actually, I think the team really tried to play a lead role in trying to help people have a bit of a diversion for a couple of hours a day. And I think hopefully they've been able to do that. It kind of reminded me of, you know, the reaction after the Boston Marathon bombings here, that I think at that point the Bruins and Celtics and Red Sox were in season and, you know, certainly hope to get people's attention on some other things a little bit.
Yeah, that's one of the great things about sports. It can be a unifying force. There's no question about that. Do you still keep tabs on your old team? Do you still keep tabs on the Bruins?
Oh, sure. Yeah, and it was funny. You know, the Bruins were in town early in the season. I think it was October 15th, maybe. It was a bit strange, to be honest with you. I remember the morning of that game kind of making some notes and thinking to myself, you know, this is the first time in 17 years that I've prepared to do a Bruins game and not been one of their announcers, you know. So it was a bit odd. I do think it'll be stranger, to be honest with you, you know, doing a game in the Garden on Thursday night. You know, I keep telling people I might walk into the wrong booth. I might walk into the home radio booth just on force of habit. But yeah, sure. I mean, look, you know, for me, Chris, not really much has changed in terms of my love and affection for the Bruins. I mean, I've loved the Bruins since I can't tell you a time where I didn't, really, since I was a kid. So still love the city of Boston and still plan on spending some time here in the summers. It's a little bit odd being in a hotel right now. I mean, I own a home 9 or 10 miles from where I'm sitting. So it's that's been a little bit of a different circumstance. But yeah, I mean, my love for the Bruins is, I don't think that's something that'll ever go away. This was just, you know, a career opportunity at a point in my career where if I was going to make a change, you know, like this, it was really too good to pass up.
As just a Bruins fan, I guess, for lack of a better term, what do you make of the team's start so far? It's been a little bit uneven, and obviously they're trying to mix in some younger guys, which we knew was going to be the case.
Yeah, I think uneven's a good word for it, at least from what I've seen from afar, and even just, you know, the game that they played in Vegas. I mean, you know, that day they were without Patrice Bergeron. And, you know, I remember a year ago, it was a similar circumstance. It was a little bit of a shorter period of time where, you know, he missed the first three games of the year last season. And I know he missed more than that here this year. And now David Krejci's out for a significant period of time. Tuukka Rask had recently been out of their lineup. And, you know, I think that comes with the territory sometimes, Chris. You mentioned some of the younger players and, you know, now Charlie McAvoy in his first full season in the league. Brandon Carlo's only in his second year. You know, you've got some younger players like Danton Heinen and Jake DeBrusk and that they're trying to work in as well. And Anders Bjork, you know, to kind of add to that mix up front. And I think, you know, that leads to growing pains sometimes. But I also think they've got enough, you know, world-class players on that team, whether it's, you know, Bergeron or Krejci or Brad Marchand. And, you know, Zdeno Chara is still, you know, effective, even though it's, you know, late in his career now. And, you know, if Tuukka, you know, can kind of maybe sort things out a little bit in net, I've got to believe they're going to be in the mix here for a playoff spot as they move down the road. But yeah, they've been kind of in line with a lot of teams that have just kind of had a, you know, a bit of an inconsistent start to the season.
Yeah, and obviously it's still early, although I wonder if you thought that when you came back to Boston for the first time to do this game, the expansion Golden Knights, the team that you're calling the games for now, would have a better record than the Bruins. This start by the Golden Knights, 8-3-0, has been tremendous. They won eight of the first 10 before losing to the Rangers on Tuesday night. This has been one of the best starts for an expansion team, I think, in the history of professional sports.
Yeah, it's been great, Chris. You know, they actually had the best start for an expansion team in the history of the NHL. I know that for sure. I mean, no one had won 8 of their first 9 games. And, you know, they took advantage of a homestand. The team had a 7-game homestand, and they went 6-1 in those 7 games. So, you know, that homestand was kind of designed, I think, early in the year to help the players get settled in the Vegas area. You know, you got to remember this is all new for everybody out there. If new players come to the Bruins, well, it might be two or three in the off season. If a younger player makes the team or they trade for a player, well, you know, you already have everybody else in place. This is brand new for everybody in Vegas. So, with the exception of Derek Englund, who's a veteran defenseman that's lived in Vegas in the off season for the last 14 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Some familiar names on that team. James Neal, Bruins fans will remember Riley Smith. Malcolm Subban has been there as someone the Bruins didn't keep, much to the chagrin of some Bruins fans here. He's played pretty well in net. So you're right, they're not your typical expansion team. And I'm sure that's made it a little bit fun, too. Was there any trepidation on your part, Gosh, about going to an expansion team and being the voice of what could be, from a sports standpoint, a lot of suffering and long nights?
I guess as an announcer, like, it is what it is, right? I mean, I've been fortunate enough to, all the years in Boston, to broadcast some terrific Bruins teams and a Stanley Cup team and another team that almost won it again a couple of years later. And there's no question that you get connected to the wins and losses. But, I don't know if I gave that too much thought, because I just had a lot of respect for the people that were going to be involved. From a team standpoint, it is different for me. I would say, I work for the team now, and all those years I was, an employee of CBS Radio with a sports hub. So that's been, I think there's kind of a feeling of we're all in this together. I mean, it's all new to all of us. And hey, look, this is, they're going to come back here, and they dropped the last couple of games after an 8-1 start, and has already kind of started to turn a little bit in the other direction on them. So they've got to, find a way to bounce back. They've used four different goaltenders now in their first 11 games of the year, which is almost unheard of, with some injuries to their first three goaltenders. But I think at the end of the day, the wins and losses are one thing, but I also know they're trying to build this for the long term and do it the right way, which is, through draft and development, which is the way most teams have to do it now.
And you're working with Shane Knighty, former Bruins defenseman, so that's a familiar face, which must be pretty cool. And I know you're also doing sort of a podcast. There's a Golden Knights podcast, and you guys recently had the opportunity to speak with NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman. What were some of the issues you addressed with Gary Bettman, who is not always the most popular commissioner when he visits NHL arenas around the league?
Yeah, well, and I didn't want to bring it up to him, but he gets far from a warm welcome. We've done some podcasts here. It's called The Sheriff, Lawless, and Some Guy Named Dave. So Shane Knighty, we call him the Sheriff, and then the Golden Knights insider is Gary Lawless, who's been working for the team here, came on board in June, and then they threw me in at the end of it. It's been fun, kind of, as you well know, an open form format, and we get into a few things. And we only talked to Gary Bettman for about 15 minutes, but I just wanted to kind of get a bigger picture feel for where he thinks the league is going. He talked a lot about player safety. That's one of the things that's pretty high up on their list, and he mentioned concussion specifically, and how do they keep this game as fast-paced and exciting as it is and also keep it safe. And I think that's something that they struggle with or look at on a daily basis.
Well, Dave, it's great to hear from you again, not only just as an announcer, but as someone I always enjoy talking with. It's so great to hear that golden voice. Welcome back to Boston. I know, as you said, you still have the house here, so hopefully we'll be seeing a lot more of you in the offseason.
Yeah, that'd be great, Chris. I really appreciate it. Great to be with you.
All right, that is Dave Gosher, former voice of the Boston Bruins, now the current voice of the Vegas Golden Knights hockey team. You can find him on Twitter. It's at David C. Gosher. Finally, the cheap seats. Tom Brady is now responsible for a different type of drive. Aston Martin, the automobile manufacturer, is producing 12 Tom Brady Signature Edition Vanquish S Volante convertibles. That's a mouthful. The car, which has Brady's TB12 logo throughout and his signature on the door sill plates, can be yours for a measly $359,950. Brady has become as good a pitchman as he is a player. TB12 can sell upmarket cookbooks, candy, workout methods, mattresses, headphones, pajamas, and now a $360,000 car. Brady is no longer merely the best quarterback of all time. He is now a walking, talking, touchdown throwing, high-end lifestyle luxury brand. The new Brady Mobile is proof that people will pay almost any price to get a piece of greatness. And that's it for this edition of Season Ticket. If you liked us, be sure to tell a friend and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Chris Gasper. I'm going to be off for a couple of days, but you're going to be in good hands here with the team at the Boston Globe. The big boss, Joe Sullivan, he hosts tomorrow. Make sure you tune in then.